This is David Wolford. I'm in Covington, Kentucky with Mr. Ted Harris. I'd just like you to kind of introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Ted Harris. I'm a native Covingtonian, fourth generation Covingtonian. Graduated from William Grant High School in 1962. Went to the military, served the military for 4 years. Came back to Covington, worked at General Electric Company for 34 years, retired from there. Attended Northern Kentucky University before that, University of Kentucky Community College. Graduated in 1973, NKU, with a degree in history and political science. Went back, got a degree in business. Also have an associate degree in history from NKU. Also have an associate in applied science from NKU.
Okay, tell me a little bit about your parents. And where in the city, where in Covington exactly did you grow up and all that?
My father's from Georgia. My mother is a native Covingtonian. We grew up on Russell Street. That's on the west side of Covington. What they call now is Old Seminary Square, which is adjacent. Well, it's in part of the Lewisburg community, which is adjacent to Old Seminary Square.
Okay. And then when you went in the military, were you drafted?
Did
you
volunteer? I joined the military.
Army or what?
I was in the Navy. I come from a military family.
Okay.
Majority of my family was in the military.
How long were you in?
I was in from, well, on active duty, I was in for 4 years, from 1962 to 1966. I went back in and served for another 7 years in the reserves. And that was from, I think it was from 70, 72 up until 78, I think, somewhere in that time frame.
When you were full-time Navy, where were you? Where did you spend most of your time?
I spent most of my time in the Far East, in Vietnam.
Okay. Something I've always heard about is that, you know, the military is different in terms of, you know, since it was integrated, even before schools were, and maybe after, that, you know, there was a different kind of relationship among the races in the military versus regular society. Did you find that to be the case at all, or?
Yeah, I served in an integrated, well, I was the only black in this one unit. I was in munitions, and when I went to boot camp, I went to a boot camp with a fellow from Bellevue, Kentucky. We became very good friends. He was a white fellow, but we became very good friends. We went to boot camp together, and we were stationed together. Came back on a bus from San Diego, California to Newport, Rhode Island. We rode the bus together from there to up in Rhode Island. We stopped here for Christmas, and we had to be up there December 26th. So we caught a bus together and went back on up to Rhode Island. So we put a shipping commission in Philadelphia in 1963. Went around Atlantic Ocean through the Panama Canal, stopped in Acapulco up to Long Beach, California. Stayed there approximately 10 to 11 months, left there and went. We were stationed in Japan. That's how it started. We were stationed ship over there. And when Vietnam broke out in August of 64, we immediately left Japan heading for the South China Seas.
Okay. All right, when did you, I guess you've told us already when you went to Grant, you graduated in 62.
Graduated in 1962, yes.
How much, you know, up till 1962, either when you were a young child or in high school age, how much intermingling between the races really went on in the Covington area? You know,
Well, being from the west side, we had quite a bit of interrelations with the white neighbor. In fact, on the west side, we had an integrated neighborhood. Russell Street was integrated. Banklick Street and Holman Street were all white, predominantly white. But we intermingled all the time. In fact, I remember in the 1950s, 1958, 1959 or so, we used to play football with the guys on Banklick Street. So it was just a common thing. And for us, that is from the west side, because we lived in an integrated neighborhood.
Did this happen by just chance, the fact that whites and blacks was integrated in this particular neighborhood, or was it over time, or you know,
was
that unique or?
Well, it wasn't for us because we just thought it was just a common thing. I mean, right. We were just kids. So, you know, it wasn't anything.
From your birth, you've had white and blacks living at least one street over.
Well, I've had them live next door to me.
Okay.
See, all the time I came up, Russell Street was an integrated street because it had all the majority of the black professionals. There's school teachers, doctors, lived on Russell Street. And in that, you had other whites who lived there for a number of years. My family moved to Russell Street in 1937. And across the street was a doctor, Dr. Dunham, who was a black doctor. Next door to me was just an average working class white folks. And they lived there all, you know, up until the 60s, and then they finally sold their house and moved or died. I think some of them died, I believe. That was just a common thing.
Yeah. It wasn't. So you'd play just this is kind of informal football games you're talking about.
Yeah, informal football, yeah.
What other kinds of things would you see in Covington where blacks and whites would be doing things together that wasn't, not in school necessarily?
Not that much. Not majority of the area, because you couldn't attend the theaters, the movie theaters, together. It was segregated. The restaurants were segregated. That's about all I can remember. We just played together. We couldn't go to school together. In fact, there was a school, John G. Carlisle, which was about three blocks away from me. It was just a normal thing that you couldn't attend that school. We had to walk across three major streets to get the grant to attend school. Now, in 1960, I tried to go to home. Well, it was 59, I think it was. In 1959, we wanted to go to Holmes. There was about three of us from the west side. And the coach out there, we wanted to play football because we were associated with these white fellows. You know, and they said, well, why don't you come to Holmes and play football with us? And we had tried to attend Holmes, and the football coach out there said he didn't want any blacks on his football team, so we just went back to Grant. You know, it was just
there was no football program at Grant by this time.
No,
is that
no,
right?
No, the football program was stopped in 1932 with the completion of the new school.
It was when the football started or stopped?
Stopped. They had a football team from 1920. I think it was 1925 up to about 1929. Grant had a football team.
Okay.
In fact, two of the years they were undefeated. Now the coach of the football team also coached baseball and basketball was a guy named Paul Redden.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived on Russell Street. He lived about two blocks from me. He lived on 1400 block of Russell. But he had his 1929 team and 1932 team were both undefeated.
The Holmes coach, do you remember what his name was?
Tom Ellis.
Tom Ellis.
Yeah.
And
I'll never forget that.
Yeah, what's the I can see why. What's the you know, give me some more information on him, or was it the community? Was it him that would have not wanted to?
To keep in mind, see, there's a number of things that were going on at the time. You had the 1954 school desegregation decision, and Covington schools were more or less forced, and this is one of the problems I have with the Board of Education today, is to find out exactly when did they decide to integrate the schools. Now, I have a friend, and I just found this out by doing this research on the Northern Kentucky Encyclopedia of Northern Kentucky, that person I grew up with who lived a block from me was the first person to first black to attend Holmes High School, and that was because of the court decision. Not a court decision. The head of the NAACP in Covington, Miss Alice Schenfessel, and Miss Bertha Moore, who was the vice president of the L.B. Faust Civic League, decided that it was time for Holmes to be integrated. They would not admit the young lady to school. So they filed suit in federal court and through the Kentucky District Court system. That case went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and they said you had to admit this young lady into Holmes High School. So in fact, she became the first African American to attend. Her name is Jessie Moore. to attend Holmes High School, and that was in 1957. And she was only one, and we attend the church together now.
You and Jesse Moore?
Yeah, me and Jesse Moore, we attend the church, and we talk about this a lot. And see, her mother and my mother were very good friends. They all attend the church together. And we, in talking with Jesse about this case, she said that she didn't know what was going on. She just knew that she had to go to court and testify before the federal court judge and so forth. When she got to home, she was strictly ostracized. No one talked to her. No one made friends with her. In fact, she felt very unwelcome at home. In fact, she felt today, that's one of the reasons why she dropped out of school, is because of her treatment at Holmes High School. And in fact, she dropped out. She eventually went back to Taft High School in Cincinnati, night school, to get her high school education. But shortly after that, that's when they really started admitting other African Americans at Holmes High School. That was in 58 and 59. But Jesse Moore was the first African American to attend Holmes High School, but that was because of a court decision.
So there was some resistance on the part of the Covington district or Holmes, you know, administration.
It wasn't resistance, not active resistance. It was a settled resistance. That is, if no one talks to you, that means they don't want to be bothered with you. If no one assists you in making a transition, that means they don't really want you there.
Yeah, but the suit came. Not, I understand the reason. Before she ever enters,
The resistance was from the Covington School Board.
Okay.
You know, and I don't know if it was an institutionalized resistance, but they did have to take her to court. In fact, there's a guy by the name of Charles Brennan, former judge, Kenton County Court Judge Charles Brennan, who's working on that entry for the encyclopedia. Right as we speak. In fact, he probably hasn't completed. But that's who was involved with this.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Mr. Lett. I think he was the principal.
He was the principal.
Lauren Lett.
Well, let me back up. When I first attended Grant, I started attending in 1950.
Mary.
Professor Mary was the principal. Lett came in 1956. And I was in the sixth grade at the time.
Okay.
And then Lett was the principal when I graduated.
Well, then let's start with Mr. Mary. What do you remember from him?
Mr. Mary lived about a block from me. Like I said, I lived in the community with majority of the school teachers and principals and things like that. Mr. Mary was a very intelligent man who kept that school together. We didn't have the best of everything, but he made sure that we achieved certain things based upon what we had. You know, in other words, we had a lot of materials were second-rate materials. At that time, see, the parents still had to buy the books, so it wasn't a point of having substandard books, because the parents had to shell out money to buy the books.
Was that the case in both white and black schools?
Yeah,
that was
well, as far as I know. Now, right. Like I said, I just don't remember whether white had to buy the books or not. I know we had to buy our books. Mm-hmm. Our parents had to buy the books, but the other equipment we had second rate equipment. But he made sure that the teachers did the best they could with what they had, and that's exactly what happened. And we had outstanding teachers. I'm talking about outstanding. In fact, we talk about that even today, the quality of teachers that we had and why they put so much effort in making sure that we accomplished certain things as far as the basic abilities are concerned. That is reading, writing, and mathematics, you know, arithmetic as they called it in those days. They made sure you were taught. You know, and the only reason why you didn't learn is because you didn't want to learn. Well, in fact, they didn't stress it, believe me. In fact, that was more important. Education was more important to the teachers and Mr. Mary than athletics. Because keep in mind, we only had one intramural high school team. That it was the basketball team. We didn't have a track team. We had a football team. We had baseball. We have any tennis team, nothing like that. Only thing we had was basketball. So, and we had band, had music, and that was another important thing to us.
Did you, I guess you ran into the you know, Mr. Mary and people like that on the street. I'm guessing there was kind of a, did they have a role outside the school day?
Yes, they did. They were very active in the community. They started the Y team. They were very active in various programs throughout the community. They were involved, they attended church here. They were a fabric in the community. They were the stabilizing force in the community. Yes, they had a very active role.
How many different churches do you suppose served your neighborhood or the black community?
The black community at the time? Well, you had what they call Ninth Street United Methodist, what they call it nowadays. It was called Ninth Street Methodist Episcopal Church. You had First Baptist Church. You had Ninth Street Baptist Church. You had St. James AME Church. You had Lane Chapel, which is CME Church. Then to a lesser extent, starting in the mid-1940s, you had Our Savior, which was a Catholic, Roman Catholic Church in school. You had roughly Ninth Street Methodist, St. James, Lane Chapel, First Baptist, Ninth Street. You also had the Macedonia Church, but that was started in 1927. But these are some of the old, still in existence, with the exception of Our Savior. With the exception of Our Savior, I guess, we all were old guard churches. And Macedonia, that, like I said, that started in 1927. So you had a very stable religious community here in Covington that the various educators and professionals attended.
And was there, of all those churches you just named, was there any one that stands out as the dominant
yeah, you had First Baptist was probably the dominant church. I say of the two orders, religious orders, I'll put it in those terms, it would be St. James, because Professor Mary and Mr. Rice and some of the others attended St. James. Then you had the rest of them either attending First Baptist or Ninth Street Methodist.
Now, the St. James was a what kind of church?
African American Episcopal.
AME.
AME.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, what I do come across some facts or statistics that some African Americans in the area were Catholic. You know, what am I right about that? Or?
Well, and see, this is a, there were a few. And
small percentage.
Very small percentage.
Okay.
And they attended the cathedral, I'd say, up until from about World War One, that era, up until 1943, they attended the cathedral.
Okay.
But it was just a small number of them. Now, just a small number. Now, there's one fellow that I did a story on him called... Frederick McKinley Jones. Now, he was an orphan, and he lived in West Covington, and apparently he attended St. Anne's Parish, or St. Anne's Church, over in West Covington. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, Frederick McKinley. You heard of Thermo King Air Conditioning Company?
No.
The company that has the refrigeration units on trucks and trains mm-hmm. That was his company. He has the patent on that refrigeration unit. He's from Covington. He was educated or tutored by a Father William B. Ryan, and who's a pastor of over in St. Anne's Church. But keep in mind, there were a few African Americans in West Covington at that time, but I'd say majority of them were Protestant, of the Protestant faith. And he was the only one I know of that attended. Now, whether he became a Catholic or not, I don't know. I've never been able to find that out. But he did attend that church. But majority of them attended the cathedral.
Tell me a little bit about Mr. Lett, then. You've defined Mr. Mary. You know, how did they differ, or what's your memories of Mr. Lett?
My memories of Principal Lett, Charles Lett, he was well qualified. But he didn't seem to have the enthusiasm as far as the changing of the guard or making sure they had the quality of educators that they were to replace. Now, keep in mind, now we only had a changeover in the high school teachers now, the high school, William Grant High School. We only had a changeover of maybe two teachers at the most in about 40 years. You had Mr. Hargraves passed. He was a history teacher. He lived across the street from me. Him and his wife, Miss Annie B. Hargraves. He died in 1954, 1955. Then you had Mr. Cobb come and replaced him. Mr. Cobb left in 61, and then Mr. Brown replaced him. You still had the same biology teacher, chemistry teacher, mathematics teacher. You still have those. They've been in the same position for years. I'm talking about at least 40 years, you know. So you had some very well qualified teachers. Now keep in mind, another thing about these teachers, they had no less than a master's degree. Like Mr. Vaught had a degree in the science of mathematics from the University of Wisconsin. Mr. Barrow had two masters, one from Harvard, one from Yale, one in chemistry and one in biology. So you had some very qualified teachers, you know. And Mr. Jackson, Dr. Jackson, who taught mathematics and physics, he had a PhD in physics. In fact, I'm doing a story right now on these teachers, and I've been looking at some of the class pictures of some of these teachers, but you only had a change of guard once between Dr. Jackson and Mr. Hargraves were the only two teachers that really left in that period of time. Mr. Hargraves died, and Dr. Jackson went on to Fisk University to teach at Fisk down in Nashville, Tennessee. And they both left about the same time.
Okay. Now you mentioned...
Going back to Lett.
About
Lett.
Okay.
So Lett was he had to deal with integration. Mr. Lett did. Now you have to ask someone else. Mary Norton. No, I don't know if Mary Norton would know that, but Coach Brockwood probably could tell you best how he dealt with the integration issue, because at the time that was the first couple years that integration was to take effect, and he knew that eventually it would impact William Grant. Now how he dealt with it, I don't know. I'm just not privy to that information. In fact, maybe you should talk to his son, because his son's around here someplace. Maybe you can talk to him.
You'd mentioned Miss Morris. Was that her name that went to...
Moore.
Jesse Moore, I'm sorry.
Moore.
It was one of the first African-Americans.
She was the first.
Now, I'm just citing a report I found from the Department of Ed. You know, sometimes these things are right and sometimes they're not.
Okay.
But it had said that four black students had went to Holmes in 56. It didn't give a name. I didn't have names of these. And I don't know if that meant immediately in the fall of 56 or if that just meant before the year's over. I understand it might be 56, 57, and they may not. I don't know when that exactly came out. But I guess my question is, regardless if that's exactly precise or not.
I don't think that's right.
Okay.
I think that would be closer to 58. Because I can more or less tell you who the four were. It was one of the Rhodes, Sandra Rhodes, I think it was. David Florence, I think, was one of them. And I can't think of the name of the other two.
Well, here's my main question in all this. Regardless if it's we're off a year or not, these people that you just named chose to go to Holmes, and that nobody was begging them to come to Holmes, I'm guessing.
No one was begging.
Okay,
that's correct.
I guess my question is, why them, whoever they were, why did they choose to do it? Was it a matter of where they lived? Was it a matter of they saw... this is a necessary step.
Opportunity.
Shed some light on that, because when you look at the records, you know, Grant operated for a good almost 10 years after this was over.
We are asking those same questions even today.
Right.
Why did they decide to go to Holmes? And the best I can surmise is the fact that they saw a better opportunity. they wanted to change the scenery. They got tired of Grant, and y'all keep in mind now, Grant didn't offer a lot of things, a lot of extracurricular activities, and most of them felt that it was a better opportunity to change the scenery.
Now, you just a minute ago bragged about, and I know you're right, on the qualification of the mm-hmm. teachers and the degrees and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, based on that, I wonder about the extracurriculars. I see the distinction, mm-hmm. you know, what drives a student at 16 years old or whatever to go to one school mm-hmm. or the other. But in terms of education, would you say there was a better opportunity at home?
Well, they thought it was.
See, the students transferring? Or?
They thought when they left Grant, most of them thought they would get a better education.
The students. Okay.
And maybe some of the parents maybe encouraged them. You know, I don't know that. But once they got there, and talking to them today, they mm-hmm. found out that we had a better education.
In terms of the classroom, you mean?
Classroom participation, classroom sizes. They had a better opportunity and training. They had a better opportunity at Grant than they did at home, because when they got there, they were ignored. They didn't get the help assistance, like the one-on-one assistance that you get down at Grant. See, that's what they found out later on. See, in fact, in talking to them, in fact, there's one guy that I talk to him all the time. He said, oh, that was the worst mistake he ever made, was to go to Holmes High School, because he realized that he was at a decidedly disadvantaged. Going to home.
Did they get the benefits from the extracurriculars? You know, if they weren't, if they took a loss,
they were more or less excluded when they got there. They weren't welcomed. You know, people won't share. If you're not welcome, they're not going to tell you you're not welcome. They'll just put things in a way that you don't know they exist. Unless you have a roadmap that says, okay, this is here, take this step here to do this, do that. You would never know it.
Right. The extracurriculars were there, but no one was connecting them to
That's
them.
That's right. It was like the programs, the scholarship programs and so forth. You know, you had guys that went out to play basketball. They left Grant to play basketball because they couldn't make the team or decided they wanted to play in homes. When it came time to graduate, yeah, they talked to them and everything, but time to graduate, they never got a scholarship. They had to come back to Brock and Johnson to get the scholarship to go to college.
To get a connection.
To get a connection. They never, none of the kids up until about 60, the mid-60s or so, was gotten a scholarship. Even Jackie Herndon, who graduated in 66 or 67, as good as a basketball, he played with Dave Cowens. He played against Dave Cowens at Newport. He didn't get a scholarship. David Johnson got the scholarship for him. Holmes never got a scholarship for him.
Did those players get the playing time at Holmes? Or just
yeah,
didn't get
they were starting.
Okay.
They were the top stars in Holmes High School in Northern Kentucky. They were the top stars. They never got a scholarship. David Johnson, those guys got a scholarship for him.
I see.
You know. But what I'm saying, going back to the old days, the only thing they wanted to do, once they found out, one of the things we always surmised that the reason why they wanted to close down Grant was to get the athletes so they could win a state championship. We've always thought that, you know, and they got the what they did was they got the athletes, but they didn't get the coach who knew how to put it together. See, they excluded Brock, you know. But I don't want to get in there. I let Brock speak for himself. But that's exactly what happened.
Sure. As Lincoln Grant, the facility that was put up in, I think, 1932,
it was completed in 1932.
Okay. Was it a K-12 school from until the time you were?
Up until 1965 was a K-12 school, yes.
Okay. And I think I'm understanding this right. Before that, when I've read about 7th Street School.
7th Street
is
School, yes.
I guess different location.
It's on 7th Street. It's across with the old Coppins building now, the old City Hall. Well, the City Hall is now. It's right across the street. In fact, the Board of Education building occupies that site.
Okay. Totally new structure.
Totally different structure. In fact, the school burned down. When Grant opened, mysteriously it burned down, I think the next week or so, or 2 weeks later or something.
Okay.
Like that.
Any word on that? Any?
No, I don't want to say. Yeah, we don't know.
No proof
no
on
proof.
Anything.
Yeah.
Did any white students? Did any white students ever attend Lincoln Grant School?
You talking about Lincoln Grant School or William Grant High School?
Either one up till 1965 or whenever.
No.
It.
No.
Okay, so once William Grant, once
it became 12th District.
Right, same building, different name. Same building,
different name. Then it went from K through A. You had white school. In fact, there's a guy I'm in VFW with, Veteran Foreign Wars with. He attended, he's a white fella, Gary Carlisle. He attended 12th District School.
But no white attended it while it was called Lincoln Grant, and no white attended it until the bulk of the Grant high school students went to Holmes.
Right.
Okay. How long did it was called, what was the name of the?
12th District.
12th District School. Yeah. How long did that building operate under that
name? I think 4 years, I believe. I think from 72 to 76, I think.
Okay. What about from 65? What was it called from 65 to 72?
It was still Lincoln Grant. It was still Lincoln Grant, I think.
Just no high school?
Let me think. No, I'm wrong. I think from 66 to 72, from 66 to 72, it was called 12th District.
Makes sense. So the very next year after there was no high school, they changed the name.
They got rid of all the artifacts and everything. That's what we're fighting about now. And change the name of it.
Okay. How big was your graduating class?
My graduating class had 11 students.
11 students?
11 students.
Was that about the right size over?
We were small because at the time, in fact, we were talking about that. I had some of my alumni talking about that today. We had eight who attended Grant. A number of them had graduated from Withrow High School, who moved to Cincinnati. See, there were about five over there. So in actuality, it should have been about 30 kids graduated from high school in my class, but they didn't. They had gone on to Cincinnati, either because they moved or either went down to Holmes High
School. Did any commute from Covington still living here into Cincinnati just to?
No.
No? Okay. We were talking earlier about the few white students who would go to Holmes, you know, do you think there was pressure from parents on this? Do you think that those that either were seeking those extracurriculars or what they thought was a lot better educational opportunity, you know, what was the parents' position on this?
Some of the black parents were true integrationists.
Yeah, explain what you mean by that, and how do you know that?
They believe, well, talking to some of the parents, they say they wanted to integrate, and a lot of them, keep in mind, a lot of them had been fighting segregation for all their lives, and this was an opportunity to have their kids go to a different school to integrate the schools.
How had they been fighting it?
Oh, different organizations, being a member of the NAACP, being a member of the Corps. Voters League was another good example. Clifford Cooper, now his mother housed the Voters League organization, you know, and all those people were integrationists. You know, they have been fighting segregation for years. You know, so that was their opportunity. Where some other parents said no, said I went to that school, you go to that school. I'm not gonna pay for you to get on the bus and go to that school, and you go right down here to Grant. You get just as good. My parents told me, my aunts and uncles and all of them told me, said, you get just a good education at Grant, you use your will homes. That was their position. And some other parents, they had a different opinion.
What do you think, in looking back on it?
I think I got a better education down there. Yeah. Although I did go to homes for summer school a year, take a couple of math courses. But I just didn't feel welcome out there. Even in summer school, I didn't feel welcome. So I wasn't going to push it.
When it came time for William Grant High School to close, what happened to the black high school teachers?
Well, that's another bitter pill that everybody's been trying to swallow for years since that time. 40 years they've been talking about that. What happened to the teacher? There was only one teacher that was accepted in Holmes High School. And that was Miss Jewel Jackson, who was the English teacher. She was the wordsmith. She was the one that made sure you spoke proper grammar. In fact, I still use some of the books that she used in school. I still use today one of my writings. She is the one that made sure you had the proper etiquette, all the things that you had to do. She was accepted at Holmes High School, but she was made the teacher of freshman English. Even though she had a PhD in English from the University of Cincinnati, some of the teachers out there at Holmes High School didn't even have a college education. But they had the tenure. Now, some of the other teachers, they were sent, Mr. Barrow, for example, Mr. Vault, for example, was sent over to John G. Carlisle to teach in the junior high. At John G. Carlisle.
And John G. Carlisle was a white school before integration, I suppose?
Yeah. That was a school that was two or three blocks from me. That was on the west side. But they were sent over to John G. Carlisle because most of the black students, they had a number of black students on the west side. That was the closest school.
I guess was John G. Carlisle in, let's say, mid-60s, and especially after Grant closed. I guess it was the blackest school
keep in mind now. Well, let me backtrack on this. Let me get a point of clarification. You need to know this, you know. Now, the elementary portion of the Covington School District were encouraged to integrate in the early 60s, 61, 60, 62. Now you had blacks, and keep in mind you had blacks lived throughout the Covington area, okay, urban area. In Peaslesburg, which is called Central Covington.
Peaslesburg.
Peaslesburg, I think it is. I have to look at my notes.
It's a community within the city,
It's a community. Well, it was an independent city. It was called Central Covington as an independent city at one time until Covington annexed it.
Like more than 100 years ago, probably?
No, this was in the 1920s, that time frame, you know. Now, you had a black community out there because most of the people worked on the railroad, so that's where they lived in that subdivision. Now, they had a school called 7th District School. Now, in 1960, you had the principal going to the black community in Peaslesburg saying, encouraging them to send their kids to 7th District, because that was the closest school. That was on like 23rd and Howell or some street like that. That's where they attended. You had people that lived down where the IRS Center is down on what's called Stewart Alley down here on Johnson Street and down here. You had 5th District, which was right across the street. You had kids like my cousin, my wife's cousin. He didn't attend the Grant. He attended 5th District. But this, we talked about 1960. So you had an effort to integrate the schools based upon the location or the district boundaries. They didn't call them that at the time, but that's what you call the district boundaries. Then you had Russell Street, the kids from Russell Street, 9th Street and 10th Street and so forth. They went to John G. Carlisle because that was the closest school for them. In fact, a friend of mine, she told me we were talking about this, and she said that when she was in the third grade, she, at the beginning of the school year, she was taken out of Grant and sent to John G. Carlisle.
By who?
By the board. By the board. The board directed them to do, the teachers, the principals to do this.
Mm-hmm.
She was taken out of school. And all the kids in her class and her running mate were taken out of Grant, you know, in third grade and sent to John G. Carlisle.
Why was this happening? Why was it? Why were they in the younger grades encouraged? It sounds a little bit before the.
Well, see, I can never get an explanation for this. I tried to check the board minutes, and I don't know.
How do you know they were encouraged? You just remember this, or
I remember it happening. Then I had people who actually it happened too.
And you recall the numbers of blacks attending the Link? I guess what was Lincoln Elementary, right?
No, it was just Lincoln Grant. That's
right,
what it was called.
But wasn't Link? I thought Lincoln was the lower grades, and Grant was the high school program.
No, that's a misconception.
Really? Okay.
It was always called Lincoln Grant. It was always called William Grant. The high school has always was called William Grant going back to 1890s. I had to go in and look at my notes. But 1890, when the school was set up to have a high school, the high school was always called William Grant. And that was based upon the person who helped get the school organized. That was William L. Grant, who was a white man, a businessman, and city councilman, helped get the school organized. The elementary school, you know, elementary school was always called Lincoln Grant, but that name only came about in the 1890s because it was always called 7th Street School. Okay?
So what was the name if you were in the third grade in 1960?
It was called Lincoln Grant.
What did you attended Lincoln
you
Grant?
Attended Lincoln Grant.
School or?
It was just Lincoln Grant School.
And then
it's a hyphen.
Yep.
You know, it's a hyphen word.
Well, here's my question to you on this.
Okay.
You were saying the elementary grades were encouraged to start being scattered to white schools.
Okay.
What's your theory on this? I believe that you remember it.
I think what was happening was they had to abide by the Supreme Court decision of 1954. That's what I think happened. They were forced to do it.
But they didn't want to shut down the whole building yet, or what's the?
Now why they didn't move the high school and everything? I don't know. Now, right. That's beyond me. I just don't know.
When it came time for William Grant to close, I mean, what was the black community's attitude at that?
Very
at 65,
bitter.
Let's say.
Very bitter. They didn't want. And in fact, what I heard just recently and talked to one of the fellows who was involved with it, the principal once Lett left, they had another black principal called Massman.
Did Lett leave before Grant closed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. And Massman apparently sold the teachers and everybody down the river. He made
What's
a deal.
What's his name?
Massman. William Massman, I think his name is. I had to get.
It was principal
out.
Basically when you were there, I guess.
No. I had left. See, he came in 60. I think Lett left in 64. I think he came in 64.
So Lett was there the whole time you were there, but he wasn't there the whole time the building operated.
Right. That's
the
correct.
End, I
they
mean.
Only had three principals. They had Professor Murray, Charles Lett, and Massman.
What do you think he? Well, what was Massman's role? What's your take on
he
that?
He was encouraged to dissolve the school. That was his motive, and he told some of the teachers. He had to talk to Brock about this now, and Brock and Johnson, David Johnson about this, and he can tell you more because keep in mind I was in the military at that time. I wasn't here when all this had taken place. This is what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
That, in fact, I just heard this the other day, and I didn't have no idea this happened. But Massman was he proposed to the board, I guess, to keep his job or whatever it was, to dissolve the high school.
What happened to Massman when Grant closed?
I think he had died of a heart attack.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think this, I've looked at this in different cities and you see this pattern of really good black high school.
Okay.
As far as the black community is concerned, very wholesome and a good asset, an institution. And then there comes a time when either, in most towns, either the high school is simply closed and used for some other thing or sold, or if it's old enough, it's destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Grant was a good structure, mm-hmm. I think. You'd agree with that,
right?
Wouldn't you?
Oh,
at least
yeah.
In mid-60s.
Yeah.
Now, you know, here's my question, and, you know, you weren't affected by it directly, but, you know, your friends were just a few years younger than you. What is the Board of Education, And I'm a teacher, and I understand that money and running a school board is hard. Mm-hmm. So what I'm getting at here is, what were the alternatives to this? What can you, where it has its drawbacks, closing down a black school, at the end of the era of segregation, what does the Board of Education have alternatives? Is this an inevitable step they've got to take? Or could something have been done differently?
I asked Virginia Chapman this one time. I attended a Board of Education meeting one time.
Who's Virginia Chapman?
She was a board president for years, for 20, 30 years. She was there for a long time. And I attended a meeting one time, and I asked her about that. She said, well, her excuse was for closing down the high school portion of it. And right today, I don't understand why they closed down the elementary portion. That makes sense to me. Still doesn't make sense to me today. But anyway, her answer to me was, well, you never had over 15 students that graduate from Holmes High School, so we was wasting our money. That was her reason for closing down high school and integrating to Holmes. We don't think that, but that's what she said.
Was she on the board when all this happened?
Oh, yeah.
Still living today? Or
no, she died. Virginia Chapman, no. She's the lady that owned Anchor Grill over here on Pike Street. She was the wheeler dealer of Covenant Politics for years. Anywhere, if you're going to get elected, that's who you went to see, Virginia Chapman. Anyway, she owned like a grill over here. But she was a board chairman for an awful long time.
So, back to the teachers that were, you said Miss Jewel Jackson kept a job. She was the only high school teacher at Grant that ended up teaching at Holmes?
At Holmes. She was the only one.
Now, Brock went, didn't he?
Well, Brock, here you are again. Brock went, but he was a freshman coach. Miss Jewel Jackson was a freshman English teacher.
But they both went and were given jobs there.
They were given jobs
there. Maybe not their first choice, but...
Right. Like I said, you're going to have to ask Brock about that.
Well, are those the only two, or do you think there might be more?
Those only two that I'm aware of. None of them got... And see, keep in mind, the freshman teachers and everything were in the junior building. They weren't in the high school.
So it was kind of separated.
Yeah, it was in the junior building. If you know anything about Holmes...
Holmes was 10, 11, 12 back then, is that right?
I think it's 10, 11, 12, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And just keep in mind, see, even Mr. Crowder, the band teacher, he was given a job, but he was given a job to teach band in the elementary, in the entire district. He traveled, like a round robin,
right?
To all the elementary schools. Mr. Crowder was the band teacher down there.
So, what, roughly, what do you think? So a very small percentage, like two, went to the ninth grade level.
Right.
And then a few, how many you suppose were scattered around, to the other elementaries or whatever?
Well, the elementary teachers, they were scattered out throughout. But the most important people who were up there to who knew, although you can't discount Miss Hunley and all the other teachers who, Delaney and all them who wind up going out to Glen Oak Swing and those schools like that, you can't discount those, Miss Webb and all. You have to talk to Miss Webb and them about that, what all happened. But they were scattered out throughout the district in various elementary schools. But none of them got the top echelon job that they deserved because of education and tenure. Although they didn't have tenure in the high school, but they had tenure in the school system, which should warrant something. Tom Ellis never beat Brock in basketball. Never defeated him. Never. I think one year. I think maybe one year. I think my senior year he defeated. But that was it.
So what happened? I know what happened to Brock, basically. What happened to the other ones? What happened to the ones who didn't get the offer they wanted, or?
Well, not, like I said, now keep in mind, you still had. Let me show you something. Let me stop this. Yeah. See, he was a social studies teacher, but you still had her, him, and him.
So now, what happened to Barrow and Mr. Barrow and Mr. Is it Vaught?
Mr. Vaught. They're the ones that went to John G. Carlisle.
Okay.
To teach in the junior high school. That's what you had.
Now, did some, I guess several went to Cincinnati too, didn't they?
Oh, well, they quite naturally. A lot of them just left, and because keep in mind, so you still weren't making an awful whole hell of a lot of money. But at least you knew what was required. You knew the students. You probably lived in the area, whatever. Like Charles Houston, for example, he's a friend of my aunt. He taught art down the Grand. He wound up going to Cincinnati and was teaching art over there. Then he became an administrator in Cincinnati public school system. So you had a Miss Sadie Bunyan and a bunch of people from the elementary school that left, went on to home, cost more money. I mean, went to Cincinnati, cost more money.
Did you still see them in the Russell Street area on a regular basis?
Oh, yeah, they still lived there. Oh, they had parents there. You know, you still.
So what was their, you know, 1, 2, 3 years after this started, what was their take? The folks who went to Cincinnati to teach, when you ran into them, you know, were they happy? Were they content? What was the story there?
Well, they were happy because they still had a certain amount of, keep in mind, the era was still disciplined. You still were permitted to teach by the students. Nowadays, you don't have that discipline. You know, you have a headache. You go into a classroom nowadays. You can probably do it yourself, you know. They had better opportunities over there because then they can use their educational background to advance, to go into administration if they choose to, or the principal. We had so many teachers left Grant or that went over to wind up being principals at Cincinnati schools. A lot of them were principals.
It kind of shows who they were.
Yeah, they were top.
And the PhD counted over there where it didn't count over here. Yeah. Is that basically what you're telling me?
Right, that's what I'm telling you. Yeah. Or they went, some of them, a lot of them left here and went to, went to colleges, start teaching college.
Wilberforce. I know one, Gilliard.
Gilliard was at Wilberforce. You had Conrad Hutchinson was at Grambling University. You had Johnson C. Smith in North Carolina. You had them that went down there. You had Fisk University. You had Tennessee State. You had Jackson State. Kentucky State. You know, University of Cincinnati. You had them. They had a number of them. Keep in mind now, see, we're going into a stage of the teachers. I can show you another book. The teachers were coming up on to retirement age. You had Miss Jewel Jackson, Mr. Barrow, and all those folks. They were in their 60s now because they had been teaching for 30, 40 years. So, you know, then you had forced retirement ages running them. So you had some people saying rather than go, Mr. Barrow, I think they lasted 1 year. Mr. Barrow, Mr. Vault lasted 1 year. I think they
at Carlisle.
Then I think they retired. They left here, whatever they did. Mr. Craig, he was an eighth grade teacher. He lived on Russell Street, on 11th and Russell. He retired. I think shortly after that he passed. Professor Mary, I think he died in 65. You know.
Is there anybody left that was, any teachers left who were in that final phase of Grant? Are there any of them still living?
No. We talked about that the other day. No. The only one of the frontline teachers, no. None of them are still living. Well, Mr. Cobb is.
Who's he?
Miss Harvey Cobb. He's still living. He's the only one that's left. But he went to Cincinnati. See, he left Grant. He's the one of them. See, but Cobb was younger than the rest of them. Because, like I said, he replaced Professor Merritt. Oh, he's not in either one of these pictures. Okay, he's still living. Now, you have to ask Brock how to get in contact with him. Because he came, they had a reunion. The class of 1957 had a reunion this past summer down to Madison. And he came. Him and Harvey Cobb came. There was about three teachers. Charles Houston came, and in fact, that'd be another person. You've talked to Charles Houston?
No, I haven't. I didn't know he was still around.
He lives out in Pleasant Ridge. He will be a good person to talk to. He could give you a complete perspective, different perspective.
Okay, I'll get in touch with him. Now, when you were at Grant, how far did students ever travel to get there? I understand way back, maybe the
Boone County, Florence.
Did anybody come far enough to stay the night, or did they just
no? They what happened was in those days. Now I wrote about that. What happened was if they lived that far, chances are they found relatives who lived in Covington.
And they spent the night with them.
Well, they spent the semester.
Okay, how?
In some cases, they would go back on the weekend. You know, they went back home.
How frequently do you suppose that was happening? Is that just an occasional thing you'd hear about, or
no?
That
happened to the time they graduated.
So what? In a graduating class, or in the, you know what? Just a, would you have 1 to 10 of those kind of people doing that? Or
it's you see. You asked a heck of a question, because you talked about Boone County, and you talking about the large black population in Boone County that were willing to send their kids to school. So you might have out of one family, like the Rileys, the Sleets, and the Hugheses. You had 15 in one family. Well, three families, but they're all related. You know, that's coming down here. The Bakers and all those people, the Sleets and all those people, you know, they would find relatives here. You had people coming from Pendleton County who from Falmouth that wind up staying with an aunt all year.
Was this that well after 1956 too, or
you had the Behannons and the Seifels that lived in Independence. And then you had Lewis's. They wound up going to Boone County. This was right after the 54 decision. And I'm trying to put this in perspective. So when the Boone County school system, the independent school system, that is, county school system, were integrated in the 50s, 54, 55, they went to those schools. They attended those schools. Same thing about Newport. You had kids, there was a decision by the Newport Board of Education to send their kids from 1922 to Grant up until the time of integration, to 54. The seniors were permitted to graduate from Grant, but the rest of them attended Newport High School, graduated from Newport. So after 56, no. They attended their local school.
So most of the local schools would take them in, and the black populace decided it'd be better to go here where it might not be so comfortable, but at least I don't have to drive 30 minutes.
Well, it wasn't that because most of the people in the rural areas in Pendleton County, Boone County, and Newport, the whites were their neighbors. So they knew them anyway.
Just the state law prevented them from...
Just state law or local laws prevented them from integrating.
It was probably smoother there, you think?
It was smoother there. I think there was a little resistance, but Newport, they were really accepted just right here because of all the thing. Everybody knew everybody, you know.
The Greenup Avenue building, this is the Lincoln Grant building in 32.
Right.
It's still standing. Right. How long was it used by the Covington School Board after 65, I think you may have answered that in a way. You said it was elementary until about 72 or
yeah,
so?
Yeah, it became 12th District School.
And then?
Then it was sold to the Northern Kentucky Community Center.
So sold to who?
Northern Kentucky Community Center.
That's its own entity that purchased
the... Yeah, it was a social service agency. It was ran by a former school teacher and a former alumni of Grant named William Martin.
And just run independently of government and everything else?
Oh, yeah, else? It was a community center.
Okay. And that's up till very recently, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's a mess right now. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, is it...
To use your words, yes. Yes.
Is it... I mean, are the doors open today if
no.
I went over there?
No.
What's the deal?
Well, it's in foreclosure. It's been auctioned off. That's what's causing a lot of problems.
Because of the condition of the building?
Because of management.
Nobody wants to run it or what?
No, you're not listening to me. Because of management.
Okay.
Mismanagement.
Understood.
They lost all their funding from United Way. Without being an attorney, I'm just giving you historical perspective, or a nonprofit perspective. If you receive state monies, federal monies, city monies, United Way monies, as a nonprofit agency, the IRS requires certain things. You have to file a 990. Especially if you have income over $25,000, you have to file an annual 990. That was not done from the time of Bill Martin retiring up until today. It has never been filed. Those are just like you file 1040 every year. You have to file 990 if you're nonprofit.
Sure.
Okay. They never
just never paid. They never followed the IRS law.
IRS laws, not only that. United Way was given $300,000 a year. They have nothing to account for what happened to the $300,000. So United Way started cutting back funding. Kentucky Department of Education funding for certain educational funds. They have no receipts for that. Accountability. Okay, and without saying too much more, that's
I understand.
That's what's going on.
It's hard to defend that.
Yeah, you can't.
Right.
You can't. You know, you have to. There are certain things you have to do. You know, and I hear this from some of the members of the board down there. They say, well, we don't have to follow the white man's law. Hey, if you want to stay in existence, you better do something. I don't care. You don't care if you're Chinese. You better follow somebody's law. You gotta follow. You know. Well, anyway.
Okay. I just kind of want to wrap it up with this. I haven't read much or don't know much about the race relations in Covington that are outside the schools. For example, you mentioned restaurants and theaters, and when that, those got integrated after the schools, I'm guessing, Covington.
Well, when I left here in 62, you could not attend the theaters or the shows or the restaurants. When I came back, when I got out of the military in 66, you could go to the shows and restaurants.
And this was, do you think, more so due to, like, federal law, like rights laws?
It was a combination of things. It was a combination of a lot of people and the civil rights organizations that forced the change acceptance. This is
locally, you mean?
Locally. It wasn't, keep in mind, Covington did not pass open housing law or integration laws until the 70s. See, but it was done like Coppins. You could not shop in Coppins or anything like that. If you go in the fitting room to Coppins until the 60s, mm-hmm. 1960s. So it was mainly because of the boycotts and various civil rights activities.
So the same kind of thing went on here that you would have seen in Lexington or Louisville.
Lexington, right. Okay. In the southern state, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm finished with my questions. Is there anything you wanted to end with here?
No.
Okay, Mr. Harris, I appreciate it.
And I would suggest, highly encourage you to call, let me get you Charles Houston's number.
Okay.